Empire.
Triple Play Fantasy Baseball Show with D. Mindy, Lil Cheesecake, and Doc starts now.
What's going on, everybody? Welcome back to the podcast. Welcome in to another episode of the Triple Play Fantasy Baseball Show. We are a proud member of Empire Media and the Empire Media Podcast Network. D. Mindy here, joined by someone who calls the Beanie Baby Fuzz as his 1.01 of Beanie Baby Bears. It's the Doc, Eric Mendelson. What's going on?
Whoa, whoa, whoa. Let's be real. Holiday 1998 was the 101. Fuzz was yours.
No, Fuzz was your favorite Beanie Baby. What are you talking about?
I don't know, man. I think you have a bad memory.
It was Michael's was Peace, our other brother. I don't remember what mine was. I think I liked, what was the green one with the scarf?
Wallace.
Yeah, I liked Wallace a lot. And then
here we are talking about Beanie Babies on a baseball podcast. What is wrong with us?
I will go to the grave saying that I'm pretty sure you were all about Fuzz.
I mean, that was maybe at the beginning year, certainly not towards the end. I promise David and I aren't virgins.
Oh, God. Well, anybody that used to play Beanie Babies growing up, or you didn't play them, we played Beanie Baby stuff with them. But anybody that collected them, they knew how great of a time that was. It was a simpler time. But we're not doing simple on this show today. In today's episode, we have trade deadline winners and losers. And let's face it, there were some winners. There were some losers, guys that are going to benefit from increased playing time, prospects that are now going to get the call and be able to make their mark with major league teams here. Honestly, it's just exciting to be able to see all these changes. It was probably the biggest trade deadline of our lifetime. I don't remember ever being one that was bigger than this. Do you?
Nah, I feel like this rivaled the NBA one. I feel like NBA free agency and the trade deadline usually steal the show.
Yeah, so it's going to be a doozy. And of course, what better person to do it than local Marylander. Joining us, of course, Mr. Pitcher List, of a guy of Pitcher List, Ben Palmer. It's going to be a fun session. Make sure to stay tuned for that. After we go to our question of the week, which MLB player would you want your future daughter to date? And our game of the week coming in to shut the door. So if you guys are ready to get another episode started, then man, we're here to do it for you. Let's do it! Yeah! Alright, there's a lot of news. We did miss some trades, but it's to the point now where I think everybody's aware of all the trades that happened, so we're going to update stuff post-trade deadline here. Starting with the Angels announcing this afternoon that Anthony Rendon is going to undergo season-ending surgery to repair a right hip impingement, being placed on the 60-day IL, and honestly just been a very disappointing season for Rendon, who in 249 plate appearances put up a 240, 329, 382 slash with six home runs, the least productive season of his career. Far cry from his elite 310, 397, 557 line between 2018 and 2020. Doc, wasn't he your MVP pick?
Yeah, I wasted $10. That's the sound of me flushing $10 down the drain.
Do you think he'll be ready next year? Are you going to draft him similar spot from where you drafted him this year?
I got him in the third round of a 12-team home league. I wouldn't take him that early because even last year he was injured with the Angels. So I feel like who's ever on that team just is jinxed. So maybe round four, round five. I'm a Tony Two Bags fan at heart from his DC days.
Mm-hmm. Cole Hamels is signing a major league deal with a $1 million base salary with the Los Angeles Dodgers. So Dodgers have picked up Max Scherzer. And they also picked up Cole Hamels, and they also picked up Danny Duffy. So some interesting names in that rotation. Cole Hamels, I mean, I don't know how much is left in the tank, but we'll have to be watching. I wonder if he starts or if he just, comes in 2 to 3 innings. So we'll have to
David Price role for him.
We can see. I could see that. Red Sox acquired outfielder Delano DeShields from the Rangers in exchange for cash. The Oakland A's have a reunion with Chris Davis, signing him to a minor league contract and assigning him to the affiliate in the Arizona Complex League. So maybe that's what he just needed to come home to the Oakland A's and to get himself right there. In Saturday news, the Astros announced this afternoon that former Major League pitcher J.R. Richard passed away at age 71. The team is going to hold a moment of silence before the game tonight against the Twins. Richard appeared in the majors from 1971 to 1980. His entire career was with the Astros. Regarded as one of the most electric pitchers of his era, he led the MLB in strikeouts from 78 to 79 and had 300 punchouts in both seasons. And it's just incredibly sad that anybody, 71's far too young, I think, still to be passing away. But we send our condolences to his family and his loved ones. The New York Yankees had a COVID outbreak that first, of course, landed Jordan Montgomery and then Gerrit Cole. Now Gary Sanchez is also included in that bunch. Aaron Judge tested positively also, if you remember, immediately after the All-Star break there, of course, too. This is a huge mess in New York. And they, for people that don't remember, they do miss 10 games. Or they're going to miss 10 days, which is most of the time 9 or 10 games. So you're going to be without these guys for a little while. So keep an eye on that. If you have Gerrit Cole on your roster, if you have Jordan Montgomery, any of these guys, just keep an eye on that. One of the players, Wandy Peralta, did make his return from the IL, is probably going to take one of those spots there. Same thing in Milwaukee, as Christian Yelich is right on his way back, should actually be activated in the next day or two from the COVID IL. Josh Hader is now on the COVID IL, and he's out for 10 days, so you would assume Devin Williams is going to be getting the saves there. Kumar Rocker and the Mets did not come into an agreement, according to the team. They're going to get an extra pick in the first round of next year at 11 overall, but people, they were concerned about his elbow, and they were not going to sign him to the $6 million that they agreed upon, so he's going to probably play some independent ball, and it's just overall just sad on both sides. He's going to be a prominent pitcher for the Mets, and you know, with Rocker and that elbow already questioning stuff before he gets into actually pitching for an organization, it's got to be scary on his end. Same with disappointing news, of course, Jacob DeGrom's also shut down until September. Now, Doc, if you have Jacob DeGrom in any redraft league and you have minimal IL spots, are you holding on to Jacob DeGrom?
I think it really depends on how situated you are. I think if you're in the front runner for a playoff spot, that you should hold on to him because the Mets are clinging to an NL East lead and they probably will want him to pitch in September so they can make it to the postseason. If you're someone that's around 500 or if you need wins, I know we're in the final 5 weeks, trade him and see if you can get some value because it's better off trying to play to win rather than just to have an ego and keep certain players.
The Yankees placed right-hander Domingo Herman on the 10-day IL. The Padres placed Fernando Tatis Jr. and right-hander Chris Paddock on the 10-day IL. Now, Tatis is on the IL with left shoulder inflammation, and this is after sliding into third base. Now, he also had been sidelined earlier this year with another shoulder problem. Talking about season-ending shoulder surgery being on the table if he does not show improvement in his 10-day IL stint. So that's huge news. So keep an eye on that because if the Padres start losing and start looking like they're more and more out of it, remember they're in the same division with the best team in the NL, the Giants, and the best new look team now with the Dodgers, I would not be shocked to see him shut down. So keep an eye on that. And Paddock has an oblique problem, which is never good for a pitcher. The left oblique strain, you know, that could be maybe 6 weeks, 8 weeks. I'm concerned about his availability for the rest of the season if you have him as well. Tyler Glasnow underwent Tommy John surgery. It was a successful Tommy John surgery. He's going to be out, obviously, the rest of this year and most likely all of next season as well. Just sad. He was a clear Cy Young candidate early on, had a 2.4 WAR through 14 starts and a 2.66 ERA, and had a 36.2% strikeout rate. The man was just a monster. It just stinks for Rays fans, stinks for baseball fans, but you're probably not going to see him until 2023. But there's a lot of negative talk. If you like hearing some positive talk, make sure you engulf yourself with all the great content over at Triple Play Fantasy. And if you want to hear more of what's cooking in this kitchen, you can check out all the great stuff going on the Triple Play Fantasy Network. Of course, we've got this baseball podcast. We've got our basketball and football podcast as well. Super Fantasy Bros. Again, if you're here for the baseball, Between the Seams with Marty and Mac is just fantastic. They are growing, getting more viewers on their shows on the YouTube each and every day. Coach's Corners, see me eat 12 donuts in 5 minutes. All great content on the YouTube channel. Of course, if writing is more your style, come to the website, tripplayfantasy.com. Tons of great articles from our talented writers. But if you want to keep up with everything we're doing, it all comes out from the same place on our social media accounts, at tripplayfantasy, which Doc runs. You'll see all the article drops, all the YouTube videos, everything you can keep track of over at Trip Play Fantasy, where, remember, we talk everything. Football, baseball, basketball, sleeves hugging the biceps.
David, not realizing that messages are more effective when they're shorter, and him rambling on is losing its effectiveness.
Nope, they're all here for it. All things you need in life right here at Triple Play Fantasy. But we're going to jump into trade deadline winners and losers with Ben Palmer right after this quick break. Triple Play Fantasy Baseball Show back at its normal time, Thursday evening. Feels good. It's nice and dark outside my house. The brightness was
just like your soul.
Yeah, there we go. I'm a vampire. Like doing my shows at night here. Of course, that ugly voice you heard is the normal co-host there, Doc. How you doing?
You know, this ugly voice is great at sales, David, unlike you.
Yeah, I'm glad you're a salesman because you're not selling me. So hopefully you sell your other clients and better aspects, other things. But we're not here to talk about you. We're here to talk about the guest that's right below us right here. This special gentleman. And I got to intro him the right way. Where's my music? Oh, yeah. We welcome in a man that's a master of the 3 M's. That's movies, music, and a managing editor. He's a fantasy sports writer for Pitcher List and QB List. The co-host of Shag and Flies of Pitcher List Pod. The guy is an FSWA member, a healthcare writer for the Daily Briefing, and near and dear to our hearts as he's a local Marylander, just like Doc and myself. Ladies and gentlemen, it's not Carson Palmer. It's not Jordan Palmer. But even better, it is Ben Palmer. How's it going, man?
It's going great, man. Quite the intro. That was fantastic. All of that. I have to say, the intro to the podcast too, with the video and all that. Fantastic. Like top notch production value. Love it.
Oh, I have to give a shout out. The video beginning is all Mr. Sleepy K, Mike Curlin. He made that for us.
Oh. Yep, you know what? Now that you mentioned it, that looks like something he would have made. Yeah. Very cool.
He's very dope.
Yeah.
And the other stuff was just me stalking your profile and just digging enough to find everything. So
that's cool. Yeah, that's cool.
So we talked before the show.
Mm-hmm.
Local Marylander, just like us, and you're apparently within 30 minutes from us too, which is
yeah. If you guys are in Baltimore, yeah, we're probably like 45 minutes from each other. I love Baltimore. I work in DC now, but I used to work in Baltimore and used to always defend Baltimore to the people who said, oh, DC's better, and be like, look, Baltimore's not that bad. But I think I kind of like, I don't know. I don't want to say I like DC better.
But
I don't. Look, I won't say it, but there are definitely some advantages DC has. DC is the most, like, I always say it's the most breathable city that I've ever been in. It because of the height restriction, I think, of the buildings. They can't be a certain like height, so there's so much more sky and sunlight. So, and this isn't a knock on Baltimore. It's like every major city, I feel like with skyscrapers, you feel like closed in. But in D.C., I feel like I can kind of breathe a little bit.
Do you enjoy paying $13 for a beer at any bar in D.C.?
No, of course not. See, that's where, Baltimore's got a great bar scene. And I definitely like that. But yeah, it's, I don't know. They're both wonderful in their own ways. Baltimore's got a lot of great stuff. Like North Baltimore, I used to work up on TV Hill right outside Hamden. And like Hamden's fantastic. Hamden's fantastic. The Avenue is, mm-hmm. There's so much good food there. The best Italian food I've ever had was on the Avenue. This place called Grano's.
Oh, yeah, you know it.
Dude, Grano's. And then the ice cream place that's there, the Charmery.
Yes. Oh, okay. So you definitely are hip to that.
And tons of great record stores there. I collect records. So there's like 4 or 5 great record stores within the Hamden area.
It already sounds like a meetup is inevitable at this point.
Absolutely.
Have you been to Pauly G's there, the pizza place?
No, I haven't heard of Pauly G's.
Oh,
no. Where is that at?
It's right near the Charmery. It's
really
like a block or two down. It's Oh. We went one time, it was like a 2-hour wait, and we ended up waiting it out. It's like really good, like Italian brick oven pizza. Like it's
wow. Have you guys been to Luigi's on the Avenue? We're going to alienate the entire audience that's listening. It's not from Baltimore. We're just going to, let's just talk, you know what? Scrap everything. Let's just talk about Baltimore food records. Seriously, though, Luigi's on the Avenue, the best sandwich you'll ever get in your life. Like they're only open for lunch. But
that's how you know a place is good.
Oh, yeah. They have a meatball. So they have a meatball sub, like a normal meatball sub, or they have this thing they call the meatball chub, which is half a loaf, no, a full loaf of bread that's been like jammed full with meatball and sauce. And it's like this monstrosity that nobody could eat in one sitting, but it's delicious.
Damn, I know where I'm going to go for lunch.
Well, you know, so Ben, I have to kind of share something here.
Yeah.
That I, you know, where you can like in your Google Maps, you can like heart a place that you actually, you know, where you want to like visit. I only have about 6 or 7 in there. It's a very hard list to get into on my Google Maps. I'm going to put Luigi's on there, which means that means it's going to happen.
Man. Let me report back. Let me know what you think. It's on the Avenue in like part of the Avenue, probably like a block or so from the Charmery. It's in like there's like some row houses and it's just like the top part of a row house. The below it is like some weird novelty store where like you can get like Catholic prayer candles for the Golden Girls or something like that.
Oh,
just really weird, random.
A perfect appetizer before I get a sandwich.
Yeah, or like a coffee mug with like Mr. Rogers on it, and his sweater changes colors when you pour coffee in it. Like that kind of stuff is in the novelty store below. But then, yeah, Luigi's up on top. They've got a sandwich called the Roma. It's like sausage and peppers and Parmesan cheese, and it's a life changing sandwich.
Well, I can't believe 6 minutes in, 6 minutes into this podcast, we haven't talked any baseball. This might be a record.
What is? Yeah, actually, I was going to ask, what is baseball? Because I'm not. that is something we probably should have talked about that before the show. But
no, see, you know what? Like, I could talk food all day. Like, that's one of my biggest passions.
Yeah, man.
So I'm all for it. I think that's. I mean, the only thing is, I'm hungry now, but it's okay. I'm going to quench that with talking some baseball. I mean,
let's do it.
A mouthful we've got to talk about here, and. Of course, it was the MLB trade deadline, right? Is it fair to say the biggest trade deadline of our lifetime, would you say, Ben?
You know, it's funny. Like, when it was starting and, like, a bunch of deals were being made, there were people – so I was – when the trade deadline happened, like, the day that all this stuff was going on, or the second half of this is a Friday, I was hosting an AMA on Reddit, and, like, I had somebody ask me right off the bat. They were like, is this like the biggest trade deadline you've ever seen? And I'm like, yeah, I mean, it's definitely up there. And then at the end of the day, I was like, no, this is the biggest trade deadline I've ever seen. This is insane. Like, I always feel like there's kind of recency bias where like you don't remember how crazy past trade deadlines were. But yeah, without a doubt, this was a wild trade deadline. It was hard
and
to
keep
up.
And the thing is, like, all insiders were in it, like Kylie McDaniel, Jeff Passan, John Heyman, like, everyone is breaking stories. It's not like one person breaking.
Even Jeff Passan.
Oh yeah, Jeff Passan.
Jeff Passan. Fooling Bob Nightingale into thinking Chris Bryant was going to the Yankees. Or was it Chris Bryant? Yeah.
Yeah,
that was hilarious.
People still love that.
Oh yeah. I've done it. I get excited about. You know, someone puts up a fake Orioles account and says the Orioles do so. Like a couple months ago. Someone put up a fake tweet that like the Orioles had traded Matt Harvey to the Nats for Drew Mendoza. And like for a half second, I was just like, oh, wait, no. I even retweeted it. I was like, this is a Mayo. Nope. Never mind.
You got night. They should just like make it from like, you got Nightingaled or something like that.
Yep.
But yeah, I mean, it was nuts. Tons of big players on the move. Tons of young guys that are getting opportunities now. It's a lot to break down. But we got to break down who we feel are the winners of this deadline and who are the losers. And it can be teams. It could be players. It could be whatever you want, honestly. There's no rules in this house. So however you want to go with this. So, Ben, I'll go with you first. Who is your first winner of this trade deadline?
So I think the first winner I thought of is someone who actually did not get traded, which is Trevor Story. I feel this is for fantasy purpose. Now, real life, Trevor Story should have gotten traded, and the fact that he wasn't traded was really weird. And if I were a Rockies fan, I'd be upset, which I kind of, I guess that's just baseline for Rockies fans, is upset at the organization.
Yeah.
But for fantasy purposes, I think Trevor Story not getting traded is great, because that means he gets to stay in Coors Field, which is always a good thing. Like, his, I don't like to dive too deep into guys' numbers away from Coors, because I got burned on that when DJ LeMahieu became a Yankee, and I was like, well, his numbers away from Coors aren't that great, and then he, like, had an incredible season. So, but Trevor Story is not especially good away from Coors. He hits .242 with a .437 slugging away from Coors. So just the fact that he gets to stay in the best hitter's park in baseball for half of his remaining games is, if I'm a Trevor Story owner, I'm very happy that he did not get traded.
No, I think it's a good point, too, is everybody's going to point as the Rockies as losers. But in reality, you're right. Like, for fantasy-wise, it is a winner for Trevor Story if you have him, because we've seen kind of with Nolan Arenado that he's kind of dropped off a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
From what he was doing in Colorado, it's like, I mean, there's a little bit of a drop expected there. So I know I 100% agree with that. Doc, where are you going for your first one?
My first winner is the Braves, and I think for a few reasons. One, I think a lot of people thought their season was over after Acuna, and they replenished that outfield. They got Eddie Rosario for Pablo Sandoval. They got Adam Duvall, bringing him back. They got Jorge Soler. They got Richard Rodriguez. So they revamped the bullpen a little bit. They completely revamped the outfield, and they still have one of the most dangerous hitting lineups. Remember, Soler hit 46 home runs a couple of years ago, which led to AL. But also, the reason I'm saying them is because of the rest of the division. The Nats and the Marlins tanked. You know, they got rid of the Marlins got rid of Marte. The Nats got rid of everyone relevant besides Soto. That's two less teams they have to compete with. The Phillies, their main acquisitions were Kyle Gibson, who's lost a little bit of his shine compared to what he was earlier this year, and Ian Kennedy, which, you know, is one piece in the bullpen. The Mets got Javi Baez, but I think Javi Baez sometimes is more of a name than actual production with how high a K rate he has. So I think the Braves, because half the division got worse, which is teams they'll probably be playing a lot, and because of the talent upgrade.
Yeah, no, I mean, I definitely think that they were able to get a talent upgrade. They definitely look like they're trying to get back in contention. I can see where you're going with that. My first one I have is winners, any young Cubs player. Because let's be honest. Let's start with the fact that you have, you know, Ortega there, and you have Patrick Wisdom there. Both guys are getting every day at bats there. Then you lost, obviously, some cornerstones of your franchise, but you got Pete Crow Armstrong, who is one of the top prospects in all of baseball in the Javi Baez trade. And then you also were able to get a couple of nice pitchers from the Yankees for Anthony Rizzo. Obviously, a couple other young players for Chris Bryant. But then again, the real benefit, Nico Horner and Nick Madrigal now are going to be your middle infield of the future. I mean, they have a lot of young pieces there. It's not like they didn't like start that rebuild. They have a lot of young players that are going to get a lot of playing time. And if I'm a Cubs fan, I'm actually excited, because they were kind of, I think, at the point where that championship window was closed, and they need to bring in a new crop of talent. And they did that. And, you know, the Ortega was probably, I think, everybody that plays high stakes leagues were, I know, cursing when he hit three home runs on Sunday, because he wasn't going to be cheap anymore. And Patrick Wisdom, again, has shown power. Obviously, his plate discipline needs a little bit of work, but I'm excited for, I think all these young Cub players, they have to be real winners in this.
Wisdom's especially a great call. I love that. He's not even all that young. He's 29, believe it or not.
Oh, wow.
Beyond his years.
Yeah, that's right. Well, I actually probably a month ago or so, when he was like hitting a home run every single game, I wrote a piece on him, and I found the average is definitely going to come down with him. Like, he's hitting 278. That's not going to happen, in my opinion. He's got a 379 BABIP, so he's slow, so that's not going to stick. But the guy has power and has had power even when he was in the minors. Like, the power is totally legit. And that's going to continue being here. The guy's got a 16.5% barrel rate right now. He can crush the ball. So he definitely has fantasy value. And now that he's getting every day at bats, I love it. Like, I want Patrick Wisdom in maybe not like 10 team leagues, but deeper than that for sure.
And he's also, I mean, if you look at it, he actually cut his K percentage down from 42 to 35%. So maybe he's, you know, getting that K percentage down is always a good thing. He's got three stolen bases, you know, across about 200 plate appearances. So, you know, maybe in a best case scenario, he gets you close to 10 stolen bases in his full season, which
not bad for a first baseman.
You know what? Actually, I'm looking at his sprint speed. He's not slow. His sprint speed, he's at 28 feet per second, which is good. It's 75th percentile. So that's he's actually faster than I thought he was. So and maybe he gets some speed. Yeah.
And he's also got third base. He can play left field, right field, so he might give you multi-position eligibility. A lot of great young players on that Cubs team. But let's go to our second winner, and James, or better called Ben Palmer. I don't know where that James came from.
You know, that's funny. James is my middle name, and my dad's name is James. My dad's name is Jim Palmer, which has always been fun in Baltimore. Like, everyone's like, "You're Jim Palmer." Like, not that Jim. We had... quick aside, we had a game. We celebrated his 40th birthday. Almost 20 years ago, or was 20 years ago. At the Bowie Bay Sox, the AA affiliate for the Orioles, and as part of his birthday, he got to throw out the first pitch. And so my mom was arranging for this, and she said, "Yeah, and for his birthday, we wanted to say happy birthday on the screen." They're like, "Sure, what do you want to say?" She said, "Just happy birthday, Jim Palmer." And the Bay Sox people were like, "What? Jim Palmer is coming? Jim Palmer is coming to throw the first pitch." And my mom's like, no, not that Jim Palmer, a different Jim Palmer. And I can't help but thinking that, like, everybody at the Bay Sox game looked up and saw on the screen and said, "Happy birthday, Jim Palmer. Here to throw out the first pitch is Jim Palmer." And everyone went, "Oh."
has your dad met the real Jim Palmer?
Yes. So, my dad met him, told me he met him. Well, they met him a couple times. One time, my parents actually ran him into him with a door on their way out from a restaurant. But the only time they've actually introduced each other to each other was in the 70s. My dad went to see him, and he was like signing autographs at something. And my dad's sister went up to him and was like, "His name's Jim Palmer too." And
it's like the Spider-Man meme in real life.
Well, Jim Palmer, the pitcher, was like, "Cool." Like, just did not, like, "Cool, I guess, whatever." Totally. Yeah. I feel like, I don't know. I don't know if I was like famous and I met another Ben Palmer, I would think that was cool, but whatever. It's Jim Palmer. He's kind of like in his own world all of the time. Yeah. So,
but I just keep thinking of like the NFL broadcasts. What is it? Who's the old Giants quarterback's name? I'm escaping when he's like, "I don't think so, Jim." And he'd be like,
Chris Collinsworth.
No, that's not Chris Collinsworth.
Phil Sims?
Yeah, Phil Sims. He's like, "Oh, I don't know there, Jim." I'm just like, for some reason, with all the Jims, it's just that's what's popping in my head.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. But anyway, so James is not far off. James is not far off.
My brain knew something. I just
somehow, man. Somehow.
There we go. But who's your second winner?
So my second winner is Josiah Gray. I was actually really excited that he got moved to the Nats because he finally like gets to just be in the Nats rotation. Now they have no reason not to just stick him in there and just have him start. And he gets to start instead of like floating around in Dodger purgatory forever, like waiting for one of the like 50 top pitching prospects the Dodgers have to like get injured or something. So he gets to pitch, which is great, and he's got some nasty stuff. He was his debut with the Nats. He was pretty decent. You know, only had like two strikeouts, but he showed off his good stuff. He has a great fastball, nasty curveball, nice changeup. The only concern, Nick Pollock of Pitchalist mentioned this on Twitter, and I do. He knows pitching mechanics better than almost anybody I know. And he expressed concern about Gray's windup because Gray does this thing where he kind of bends down his back leg pretty low to the ground while he in his motion. And Nick's concern was that could make that's difficult to balance. So that could make him kind of either rush or drag his release point, making him kind of inconsistent with his location. I don't know if that's going to be a consistent concern, but if Nick's concerned about it, then I'm concerned about it because I trust his judgment. But even still, Gray's got some pretty nasty stuff, and he's going to be able to just keep pitching. So I'm really excited to see what he can do.
Yeah, no, I mean, he's going to get every opportunity in that rotation. That rotation's led by the injured Steven Strasburg, the ineffective Patrick Corbin, the Joe Ross that's Jekyll and Hyde. I mean, there's plenty of opportunities for him to be in that rotation and
There's no reason not to. Like, it's Corbin and, like, what, Paolo Espino? Like,
okay. Eric Fetty.
Yeah, Eric Fetty. Like,
Fetty what?
Like, who are you? Like, I don't see the Nats being like, well, we really got to get some Eric Fetty starts, so I think we need to keep Gray. Like, no, they're going to throw him out there.
Of course they got to get Eric Fetty starts because they want to tank now.
Well, that's true. But, yeah, I mean, I think Gray's got some nasty stuff and definitely has ace potential down the road, so I'm excited to see what he can do.
Yeah, no, I think that's a great call, and I'll just throw in there also his battery mate there, Mr. Ruiz himself. I think it's
Kybert or Kiebert. I actually don't know. So here's a weird thing with him is, like, I don't know why he's not starting a catcher like tomorrow, because he's clearly been very good in AAA, and I mean, I don't think the Nats are like enamored with like Riley Adams or Trey Barrera or whoever else they've got at catcher. So, like, why this Saint Kybert Ruiz is same age as Gray, I think they're about 23 or whatever. Why on earth wouldn't you just put him back there? I mean, maybe it's a service time thing. I don't know. But yeah, I don't know why he's not like starting a catcher now just to see what he can do, because he's clearly crushing AAA.
But I would be willing to bet he'll get called up at some point.
Oh, like, yeah. I'd be shocked if he isn't, which is why I think in, like, deeper leagues, I think he's a nice little stash, because catcher is an absolute dumpster fire of a position. So if you can find a guy who can actually produce at catcher, then, yeah, he's worth a stash if you've got the bench for it. But, I mean, the guy's hitting 311, 381, 631 in AAA. In 52 games.
Like, he's a great contact hitter, too.
Yeah, he's ready. Like, but, yeah. No, I think that's a great call. Ruiz is great.
Doc, who's your second winner?
So, for me, it's Clayton Kershaw. And roll with me on this. So, there was something that came out yesterday that he's not going to throw and won't be doing so until his forearm pain subsides, because he was originally supposed to have a simulated game on Sunday. Now, imagine if the Dodgers don't make that trade for Scherzer and he goes to the Padres like Ken Rosenthal originally reported. So you have the Giants and you have the Padres making moves. The Giants are already leading the division. Dodgers probably won't have Trevor Bauer pitching this year, which means they have a depleted rotation led by Walker Buehler, Julio Urias, Tony Gonsolin. There would have been more pressure on him to come back, I think. So I think with the acquisition of Max Scherzer, you have another arm there that can eat innings. It's another veteran pitcher there. You don't have to rush his rehab. And in the playoffs, there's going to be less pressure on him, I think, if he does return. So I think the Dodgers trading for another ace in Scherzer allows Kershaw to take the time that he needs. Hopefully, or most likely, LA gets in the postseason. And now I think that, you know, hey, if there's a winner-all game, game seven, you roll out Scherzer instead of Kershaw, where he wasn't always performing in the clutch.
Yeah, that's a good point. I think most time we hear the Dodgers, we think of just a bunch of injury and pain.
Dodgeritis.
Yeah, so I mean, I agree with you. Obviously, it's a loser for fantasy, but in real life, you're referencing, it is good for the Dodgers overall to be able to allow him to rest and be ready for the playoffs. So I agree with that.
Do you think this might? I kind of wonder now, do you think maybe with these injuries and all, maybe David Price gets some more starts or something? Because, I mean, he's there.
We were talking about this last week, and I said, I think David Price is the guy that is effective for three innings. Like, you have in a middle relief role, or you have in, like, the opener. I think anytime he's going to go four or five, that's when you're going to see him less effective the second or third time around the lineup. I just don't think he's that guy anymore. Like, he took the entire last year off. He doesn't throw as hard anymore. His delivery, I think, was partly what was so deceptive about him in the past. Yeah. I think to maximize his effectiveness, you have him as an opener, you have him as a long reliever if your starter gets shelled.
Yeah, I think that makes sense. Yeah, I was just wondering. I'm like, well, if Kershaw's hurt and they need some starters, David Price is there. But yeah, that makes sense. I think it makes sense.
Yeah. Can never know anything with the Dodgers, honestly.
Yeah, it's a nightmare. I hate owning Dodgers pitchers.
I'll throw one more in here. That another winner is the Minnesota Twins, and I'm an in the closet Twins fan. I don't usually like post too much about it on Twitter or anything.
In the closet Twins fan, I love
but,
it.
But a year and a half of Berríos netted Austin Martin and Simeon Woods Richardson, both top 50 prospects, and to get that type of haul when the Nats had to include Trey Turner to even get any prospects worthy to get back from the Dodgers here, you know, you have a guy that in Simeon Woods Richardson. That is going to be hopefully maybe a number two starter for us at some point. Martin was, I believe, the number five pick in the draft. He's going to be a stud for us. I think we're going to play him in multiple positions. A good high average guy when he debuts, probably. I'm very excited for that return for only a year and a half of Berríos. And Berríos is a very average pitcher. He's
No.
For fantasy, he's like a number three starter. And I said this on the SP Streamer podcast when I went on the other day, that I said, this is the point where you need to sell Jose Berríos. His value will go down. He starts against the Red Sox on Friday. And I read his stats against the entire AL East. And for our listeners, I don't know if I've actually read that on our pod. So for those that want to know, this is his stats against the AL East, okay? So against the Orioles, he's 6-0, 2.94 ERA in his career, which that's obviously it's Baltimore. But against
Ouch.
The rest of the division.
My heart.
That's right. Yeah, you're an Orioles.
It's fair. It's fair, but, you know, still hurts.
Against the rest of the division in his career, 0-5 with a 4.93 ERA against Boston. Against the Yankees, 1-2 with a 5.79 ERA. Against Tampa Bay in four starts, 0-2 with a 7.15 ERA. So, as you know, MLB likes to make it where they schedule a lot of the division games at the end of the season. So if there's a tight race in the division, they can battle it out, right? So that's going to be a lot of the games he's going to have in the stretch when you're in your fantasy playoffs. So I'm telling you right now, he just beat up on the Royals that he always beats up on. He's going against Boston, I believe, in Fenway on Friday. After that start, his value's taking a hit. And it's going to keep taking a hit the rest of the season. So I'm telling you, if you have him, you got to sell him now.
David, don't dampen my love for him.
I'm just saying like it is. If you look at his like XFIP, his XFIP is usually like in the high threes, and it could be even sometimes in the low fours now, depending with the worst environment, better hitting teams in the AL East. I've never been a big – Berríos is a solid number two, number three starter. He's not an ace, and I think he gets hyped up a little bit more.
Because he's filthy.
Yeah, he has got.
Oh, he has one of the prettiest pitches you'll ever watch.
Yeah,
in that curveball. But it's kind of weird because like that curveball is gorgeous, but you would think it would have better swing and miss numbers than it does, and it never really has. Like even like this year, it's got a 31.1% chase rate and a 15% swinging strike rate. Both of which are very good, like solid numbers, but not like, you know, incredible, ridiculous numbers. The way his curveball is, and as frequently as he uses it, I almost expected to have like a 40% chase, 20% swinging strike, or something like that. But it is a good swing and miss pitch, not an elite swing and miss pitch. But it still works for him, and you know he's got that 3.31 ERA comes with a 3.54 FIP. 3.72 Sierra. So, yeah, I could definitely see this being a sell high moment, especially with him moving to the AL East where he's going to get to play in a whole bunch of hitter friendly parks, a lot more often in Camden Yards and Yankee Stadium and Fenway.
Yeah, it's going to be obviously. Will I be right? Well, you know, or maybe this year's different. I don't know, but that's at least how I feel about it. But we're talking about Jose Berríos being a loser. We have to go to the losers. I guess that's technically my first one there. So then who is a loser of this trade deadline?
A combo of Liam Hendricks and Craig Kimbrell.
I was thinking about saying that. I'm glad I didn't.
For fantasy purposes, I think the move was great for the White Sox. I mean, it makes their bullpen ridiculous, but they came out right after the trade and basically said the two of them are going to share save opportunities. you know, whether Hendricks or Kimbrel gets first shot at those save opportunities depends on which baseball analyst you're talking to, because no one knows. I kind of lean towards, I think Hendricks will get first shot and Kimbrel kind of becomes his setup man. But again, I think they'll both get save opportunities, and it's just, it hurts their fantasy value because they're not going to get every save opportunity out there. And, you know, you have to own them. I think you still own them. They're, you know, going to put up good ERA and strikeout numbers. And if you're in a save plus hold league, then you're fine. But if you're in a save only league, that definitely hurts their value for you.
Yeah. I mean, Craig Kimbrel's been a revelation. People were, you know, some people that were able to target him where he was going in drafts and reaping benefits. And now if you're not in a saves and holds league, you're kind of like scrambling, like you can't drop him, but your saves are taking a hit. I'll even just add to that, if you have someone like Kendall Graveman too, like just closers in general, right? Like Kendall Graveman, I was one of the guys producing for me in TGFBI as far as my saves. Him and Iglesias were two of my biggest guys, and now he's in Houston. Now he's not even rosterable anymore, pretty much where he is. Like, Paul Sewald was making a big splash, and now Diego Castillo's taking that away from him right after you thought he was going to be the closer. So the White Sox, I think, definitely are the headline for sure with that situation. But I think a lot of these closers that you had, obviously there will be new ones that get roles, but the ones that you had been kind of either used a lot of money on or I'd been banking on and riding a little bit, now you have to kind of scramble and find it other places now. So
yeah, for sure.
Doc, what about you?
Well, so that was going to be my second one, but since we're kind of on the topic of it, for me, it's the Mariners. I don't really understand their reasoning behind the trade deadline. They traded Graveman and Rafael Montero for Abraham Toro, who I've never been a fan of, and Joe Smith. They then got Tyler Anderson and Diego Castillo. But the reason I say they're the losers is because of the chemistry. Like, Kendall Graveman was very emotional getting traded, and it was not a popular move in the clubhouse. This is the quote from CBS Sports, and they're saying how after the trade, there were players bashing equipment, breaking stuff in the dugouts. And this is a quote from an anonymous player that asked to be off the record. "Are you effing kidding me? It never changes. They don't care about winning, ... It never changes." And they said the word thrown around there most was betrayed. If your players are feeling betrayed, that's not bode well for the long term of the organization. And it's not even like the Mariners are very well run. We're coming up on 20 years that they haven't even made the postseason. Keep in mind there was expanded playoffs last year. So you have that drought. You have an owner, DePoto, that has a reputation for being cheap and for being stuck in his ways. And now you have current players that are coming out, obviously afraid to speak on the record, but are damaging equipment and saying, look, nothing changes. They don't care about winning. What person is going to want to sign there long term, especially seeing how they're handling Jared Kelnick? I just think whatever reasoning the Mariners had behind the trade wasn't good. They didn't handle it well, and it's really going to cripple them in the future.
Yeah, I mean, so the one thing I will say is I think the owner, Jerry DePoto, I get the impression from what I've heard that he's kind of like a Billy Bean kind of thing, and he doesn't go and talk with the players. He's very much just, he's like, look, we're separated. You know, I'm going to be...
It's done very well for them.
I'm just saying, like, I think that's...
He shouldn't change anything. He shouldn't change anything.
That's the way he's been operating, and I think if he'd went down there and explained to Graveman and gave him some type of heads up and, like, talked to him man-to-man, I think that could have helped settle it a little bit.
But he also traded him in the division. That's what a lot of players were
annoyed
about.
The one thing I will say, for everybody questioning, and then Ben, I'd love to hear your thoughts on this too.
Yeah.
They traded a guy who, number one, was a free agent after this year. Two, if you look at the spin rates on his pitches and his overall effectiveness, they've drastically decreased since the sticky stuff ban. And it looked like he had become kind of a little bit more what he'd been his whole career. He was starting to trend in that direction. Number three, you got a guy in Abraham Toro who has a 16% strikeout rate, which is insane. And you have, I think, believe 4 or 5 years of control for him. And he's shown that every single stop that he's been at when he's gotten playing time, he's been effective. I think, yes, the ownership needs, or like the GM, they need to get a better relationship. I think that aspect is 100% true. But as far as the actual trades, I think it was, I actually have to say I applaud the moves he made, just not the way he did it. I don't know how you feel, Ben.
Yeah, I think the trade itself, especially in light of them later getting Diego Castillo, I think it's fine. You know, it's weird. So Graveman to Castillo, it almost feels like a lateral move, which, you know, I would say they're roughly equal. But on the flip side, they get some players in return. They get the Graveman was the Abraham Toro trade, right? There were so many trades, I lost track of all of them. I guess it kind of depends on how you feel about Abraham Toro. Like, is he a guy who is all power and nothing else? Then, you know, that's not super great. But if he's a guy who you think can develop a decent batting average, hit for good power, and be, you know, decent in the field, then, you know, that's not too... And then you kind of maintain your level of bullpen efficiency with Castillo, you know, it's not too bad. I don't know. I definitely think the way it was handled was very poor. Mm-hmm. And that's definitely, unfortunately, that's the thing that's going to be getting the headlines, and that sucks. And that's all on DePoto for sure.
Yeah.
He should have handled that much better. The cold, pure, like, analysis of the move, I don't think it was necessarily a bad move because they got Castillo and kind of evened out the bullpen a little bit.
Yeah. Let's do two more. I'll bring up one, and then, Ben, I'd love to hear your last one here. I have the San Diego Padres on this list, and I'll tell you guys why. Because you look at it, obviously they brought Adam Frazier in. That's a great move. He's a great contact hitter, hitting atop of that lineup, and they're going to shift guys around to, you know, maximize their best against opposing hand pitchers, whatever the case may be. But they lost out on Max Scherzer, and they really lost out on Max Scherzer, like to the point where they said he was going there, and then all of a sudden he wasn't. And you did not get Jose Berríos either. You didn't get another impact starting pitcher to join that rotation. Now, they lost him, Max Scherzer, to somebody they're competing for a wild card spot with right now. It adds more reason why it's bad. Then you also just lost Fernando Tatis, and if you had went to acquire Trevor Story, then it might not have been a big issue, or you were able to get Chris Bryant. They didn't get anybody, so they lost. They potentially could lose Tatis for the year if they say after the 10 days that he doesn't look much better. They've already reported that. So I think there's really big losers in this case. But that's just my thought.
No, yeah. It would have been funny if we were both just absolutely silent for like a solid like 30 seconds. I'm just like, I just want to soak that in. That's a good point. The Padres didn't really make any huge moves that I remember. But again, there was like about 30,000 trades within 24 hours. So maybe they did and I forgot. But yeah, I mean, especially with Tatis going down and maybe having season ending surgery. I mean, that's a massive blow to them. And then on top of that, you've got, you know, Blake Snell hasn't been nearly as effective as they would have wanted him to be, or Chris Paddock. And I mean, there's definitely some glaring holes in that team for sure. A team that has clearly World Series aspirations compared to the Dodgers, who very much shored up their rotation and made some good moves. So yeah, I can definitely see that.
It's very tough. And I feel I'm not a Padres fan by any means, but I know they've been through so many years of mediocrity and it's fun. It was fun to see them become relevant, and it seems like they can't get over this hump.
And they're such a fun team. They're such a fun team to watch too. Like they're just, I really hope that MLB looks at how much publicity and how much people love the Padres, and sees that it's because they're having fun and showing emotion and having a team full of different personalities, because I think that's nothing but great for the game. And if every single team acted like the Padres, I think baseball would be hugely popular. I mean, I think it would do wonders for the game. So I've been kind of rooting for him a little bit, you know, even though I still feel a little scorned by Manny Machado. I've been kind of rooting for the Padres because they're just so much fun to watch. God, I hate the Dodgers. I really do. I just the Yankees of the West, man. I really hope the Padres make it far in the playoffs, but not having Tatis, if that happens in the playoffs, it just, not only will it obviously hurt the offense, it just won't feel the same, you know? Like just yeah. It won't feel like the same Padre. I feel like he's like the heart of that team. And yeah, just not having him would suck.
That's just like losing Ben Palmer from this podcast.
Exactly. Exactly. That is a great analogy. That is perfect. One to one analogy right there.
You're the Fernando Tatis of podcasters there. We got your services tonight. So let's finish it out. Let's be a Debbie Downer one more time. Who's the last loser you want to bring up here?
For me, it would be Luke Voit. He's on a rehab assignment now. Like, he just hit a home run the other day. He's going to be healthy soon and has nowhere to play, like, at all. I mean, with Rizzo there at first base, you know, Gallo's an outfield guy now, and, you know, so that, you know, Stanton can kind of stay at DH. I don't know where Luke Voit plays, like, at all. And he's not going to get any consistent playing time. I mean, unless somehow he's never played anywhere else but first base. He played one inning of right field once, and that's it. So, you know, when he's back and healthy, I don't know where he plays at all. And so that just destroys any hope of fantasy value that he had. I was kind of hoping he'd get traded and just have an opportunity somewhere else once they got Rizzo, but I guess not. So, yeah, it sucks. I like Voit a lot. I think he's a great hitter and can have a lot of great fantasy value, but I just don't see how he's going to play, like, at all.
Can I be a Debbie Downer for one more thing?
Yeah.
We're on the subject.
From a fan perspective, I think the biggest loser are the older fans of Nats and Cubs. And David, I think about someone like our dad. Like, the team's sold. They're going to be in full rebuild. Obviously, you've got to see a team win the championship, you know, the Nats 2019, the Cubs 2016. But if you're older, you probably think, hey, this team, their best chances of winning another World Series aren't going to happen anytime soon. And I feel like as a fan that has been following a team for a while, that's got to be depressing knowing that in your lifetime, you probably won't see them be competitive.
That's a good point. That's actually, that hits me pretty hard, the way you worded it.
Hadn't thought about that. Yeah, man, that's tough.
It was just being Debbie Downer. Like, look,
No. I think that's a great point. And it's, you know, we can be Debbie Downers. We can kind of soak in the uncomfortable weirdness that is, because
we gave a warning. We gave a warning.
Yeah, it made me think of my grandparents were Orioles fans from, like, you know, the 40s, 50s, I guess. 54 is when the Orioles came to Baltimore. And they've been Orioles fans forever. And I remember they got to see my grandfather died before the Orioles were good, but my grandmother, her last year she was alive was the year the Orioles made it to the ALCS. And I was living with her, at the time. And it was so cool to be able to have her, to be with her as she got to experience that one last time, because God, the Orioles have been so bad for so long up to that point. I mean, up until the year before, they hadn't made the playoffs since like 1997. And then like 2012, I think, was their first playoffs, 2013. So they finally made it to the ALCS and it was super exciting. And, you know, obviously that didn't work out well, but, you know, getting to see that. So yeah, I can imagine that's kind of tough to sit there and think, like, you know, this team is 5-6 years at best away from being competitive, not even World Series winning, competitive. And if you're a Chicago fan, you're looking at the Bears. If you're a football fan, like, not looking great all around.
The Bulls, though.
Yeah, that starting five is, let's do a basketball podcast now.
Hey, we'll get you on our basketball one.
Yeah, you're on the right place there.
There you go. I'm a long-suffering Wizards fan, so I
can't. Hey! All right, we got you on. We got you on, Ben. We'll DM.
Just real quick, like, two words. Russ trade. Was it good or bad? What do you think?
It's good.
I agree.
I became a basketball casual because I spent so much time in football and baseball. So now I'm just very surface level with my knowledge these days. but great discussion about all that stuff.
Yeah, man.
We will now head to a little fun here and starting off with the question of the week. All right. Our question of the week, of course, is sponsored by Monkey Knife Fight. We are our official affiliate to Monkey Knife Fight, the Triple Play Fantasy brand. the fastest growing sports betting site in the United States. Use promo code TRIPLEPLAY and get up to $50 of your deposit matched when you become a new user and you use that code. So our question this week. Now, Ben, I do not know. Do you have any kids?
I have two sons. They are 10 and 5.
So this question applies the same for all of us because we all don't have a daughter. But if we did, who would you, which MLB player would you be okay dating your daughter? And so go ahead and take it away.
To me, the answer is exceptionally easy. And the answer is Brett Phillips.
Why is it Brett Phillips?
Brett Phillips, I don't know if you've paid much attention to Brett Phillips, but that man is just a joy of a human being. He is like, the thing I love about Brett Phillips is that he's never too into the baseball game. Like he is, and he's serious about it, but like there's always this attitude with Brett Phillips of, we're just having fun. Like, we're just goofing around. We're playing a game, whatever. This is fun. Like, literally, last night, he went to catch a foul ball that landed in the stands and, like, scared this woman who was sitting there because he was, like, running at her. And after it landed foul, he, like, checked on her and, like, patted her on the head and was, like, talking with her real quick, just mid-game. He did the, if you haven't seen the video of when he pitched in a Rays blowout loss, it's the best thing ever because he was just being a total goofball in front of tens of thousands of people. Well, it was Tropicana, so thousands of people and all the people watching. And he was like doing like goofy windups and like just being a total dork and just having so much fun. He is the most free human being I have ever seen play baseball. He is 100% purely himself. And he just seems like the nicest person on the planet. I routinely will watch his the game. What was it, game six, where he hit that double to the outfield to in the World Series that scored Randy Arozarena to win the game.
Yeah,
it's just that moment to me is like why I love baseball, because you get a guy like Brett Phillips who is batting like 200. And it's like the worst person to have up at the plate at that moment. And he hits a double and he's like airplaning out in the field and everyone's tackling him and he's laughing and having fun. It just, it's beautiful. But yeah, he's a delightful human being and strikes me as like the nicest person on the planet. So absolutely, he could date my hypothetical daughter.
Well, that's a great way. I mean, the reasoning and
It sounds like a TV show. I want you to date my
husband. Yeah,
I mean, dude, I want to date Brett Phillips. That man is he's like just the best human being. I wish he was on the Orioles. I also wish he was a better hitter. He's just not a very good great fielder, but he's like a 200 hitter who maybe steals 20 bases, and I'm worried that he's like not going to be in the majors for very long, but
God, that's why he's enjoying it.
He also strongly recommend, look up on YouTube, Brett Phillips laughing. He has the goofiest, weirdest laugh you will ever hear. He sounds like a walrus. It's wild. It's wild. Yeah, that's the best way I can describe it. But strongly recommend looking up videos of teammates telling him jokes.
I'll be looking that up after the show for sure.
Yeah.
Doc, who's your answer?
So I have a few ones. So Freddie Freeman is married. But Freddie Freeman just seems
like that's a good call.
He just seems like a really nice guy. Like,
yeah.
I don't know if that's the whole caveat. Like, oh, you can't pick somebody that's already married.
I have no idea what Brett Phillips' relationship status is. So no clue. No, Freddie Freeman seems like someone you would like. Your parents would like.
Yeah. I would also say, and because I met him, John Gray is a really, really nice guy. Like, you know, it's signed autographs for everyone, not just like, oh, here you go. It's like, oh, like, where are you traveling from? Like, oh, what's a good spot to eat around here? I was jokingly going to say a Mormon baseball player, though. Apparently the only Mormon baseball player is Bryce Harper.
He's a Mormon?
I typed in Mormon players MLB and Bryce Harper is the first one that comes up. So
I had no idea. That's wild. I had no idea.
So I would say Bryce Harper because I know that he wouldn't try to get her in bed.
There you go. I had no idea he was Mormon. That's kind
of. I mean, maybe Google's lying, but it says no. Jeremy Guthrie's Mormon too. So Jeremy Guthrie, you can date my future daughter. You just can't marry her.
Sure enough, Bryce Harper is a member of the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints.
Wow.
And has spoken publicly about his decision to abstain from alcohol.
Wow.
So there you go.
Does not give off that vibe.
No, he definitely gives off whatever the opposite of a Mormon vibe is.
Yeah.
I'll throw another first baseman in here. What about Anthony Rizzo? I feel like he's
Rizzo seems like oriented.
Yeah. You know, he had Hodgkin's lymphoma and you beat that, so you know he's a tough guy.
He does a lot for charity. I think like he has like dogs and like his wife. Is like
oh, he has dogs. He has dogs. I like that.
That's key.
They're sensitive.
David, Michael Vick had dogs too.
I mean,
don't forget.
That's true. I mean, he has dogs that he's making them happy.
No. That's not it's a moot point now. It's a moot point.
Regardless of the point of Anthony Rizzo being a good guy to date.
I agree with that.
Rizzo seems like a cool dude. I think it's a good choice.
Yeah. But okay. Now that Eric's done destroying my points here. Let's move to the last segment of the night, and that's going to be
an awful point.
It's going to be our game of the week. From now on, Eric, when you start talking, I'm just going to do this.
But David, I have a hypothetical dog.
Where's my
phone? And hypothetically, you're a nice guy.
Yeah, see? All right, so our game this week. We told Ben before the show, it's always completely all over the place. So we're playing a game called the MLB nickname game. So I've got seven names on here. Seven is for the tiebreaker. So six is the actual, we have a winner by six. And what we're going to do is I'm going to read you a nickname. And if one of you can get it without me giving you the multiple choice options, you get 2 points. If I have to give you the multiple choice options and you get it, you get 1 point. All right.
And so I'm calling with our name.
Yeah, just buzz in with your name. Just say Ben or Eric, and that will get you, obviously, the I'll go to you, whatever.
Okay, I'll say Ben then.
But the thing is, obviously, there are some really popular nicknames. I did not take anything that was super, super common. So these aren't going to be gimmies by any means. Are you guys ready?
Let's do it.
Yeah.
All right. Number one, La Tortuga.
Ben.
Go ahead.
That's Williams Estudio, right?
Show me Williams Estudio. Correct.
All right.
All right. So Ben's got two. Doc, did you know that?
I would have known it had you said multiple choice.
All right.
It's like the perfect nickname for him, too.
It is.
I know.
Number two, Baby Giraffe. So I'll give you guys like 5 seconds. All right. Multiple choice options here is A, Brandon Lowe, B, Luke Voit, C, Brandon Belt, D, Matt Carpenter.
Eric.
Go ahead.
C, Brandon Belt.
Is he right? Is it Brandon Belt? Correct.
Nice.
So we've got a 2-1 ball game as we go to
I remember them making fun because he has a super long neck.
Oh, that makes sense.
Number three, Boomstick.
Oh, that sounds familiar.
Well, you guys will get it probably when I read you the multiple choice options if you don't know it.
Yeah, I don't know off the top of my head.
All right. Multiple choice options are A, Javi Baez, B, Eloy Jimenez, C, Vlad Jr., or D, Nelson Cruz.
Eric.
Mm. Go ahead.
Nelson Cruz.
Oh.
Just beat Ben to it. Looked like you were ready to.
Oh, no, I was going to say the wrong one. I was going to say Vlad Jr. So.
Oh, there we go. So
I
we
saved
got two,
myself.
2-2 ball game going to number four.
I totally thought I was going to lose after the first one. So this is redemption.
Number four is the Cuban Rocket. And the choices are A, Randy Arozarena, B, Rafael Devers, C, Jonathan Villar, or D, Luis Robert.
Eric.
Oh, I think Eric, you just beat it. Go ahead.
Devers.
Is he right? Is it Rafael Devers?
No.
That's what I was gonna say. Good thing you beat me.
No, you got one very shot.
I then do I get a shot at it? Then I'm gonna say Robert.
Is it Luis Robert? No. That's what I would have guessed too if I was read the question. The correct answer is Randy Arozarena.
Yeah, I was debating between those two. All right,
so we're 2-2 going to question 5. And this person is known as the Squirrel.
Eric.
Go ahead.
Our guy, Jeff McNeil.
Is he right? Is it Jeff McNeil? When we first started this podcast a year ago, we shouted him out every episode. And I guess you did your homework and you knew that was his nickname from back then. I didn't even know that was his nickname. So good way to use your tools.
There you go.
There, Doc. All right, question 6.
This is the final one, right?
Yeah, Ben, if you get this, we have a tiebreaker, though.
Ooh, okay.
It. Oh, boy. Ooh, that no means pressure. You got to get it without the multiple choice.
No pressure. All right.
Now, Eric, is there gamesmanship to where you're going to give him a chance to try to guess it before you shout?
And if I actually know it, then I'm going to say it. But if not, I'll give him a chance to get it.
Okay. Number 6 is the Sheriff.
Ben.
Go ahead.
For some reason, my gut's saying it's Freddie Freeman. I think that's wrong, though. But we'll see.
What were you going to say?
I was gonna say George Sherrill. I was like, no, wait, their last names just sound familiar. I'll go Clayton Kershaw. It's just a guess.
Oh, Kershaw's a good guess.
All right, so both of you, I will read you the multiple choice options just for fun. The choices are A, Luke Weaver, B, Chris Paddock, C, Michael Wacha, D, Andrew Kashner.
B, Paddock. Paddock looks like a sheriff.
I was about to say Paddock, too.
It is Chris Paddock.
Yeah. He does. He looks like a sheriff now that I think about it.
Actually, he kind of does. But unfortunately, Ben.
David.
I hate doing this.
David. That's 2 for me in 1 week. One person cheer. Thank you.
Your one person cheer.
Wait. Can you just do the music that you introed Ben in really quick, the techno one?
Why?
I'll dance for like 10 seconds.
Oh, good thing this is on recording.
Yeah, it makes for great radio.
All right. That's enough.
Ben, I swear that's not me trying to be a sore winner. It's just rubbing.
No. Well done. That was tough, man. That was really tough.
Ben, on that note, I want to thank you so much for coming on the show tonight. Even though you couldn't take out Doc in the game, it was an absolute pleasure having you on.
Oh, man, thank you so much for having me. It was a lot of fun.
And you want to give everybody the where they can find you on Twitter, all the great stuff that you're doing over at Pitcherless and QBless too, right? So all the great stuff.
I'm on Twitter at Ben J. Palmer. I do stuff on Pitcherless. I've got a column that comes out every Sunday about hitters to stream in the coming week. I'm working on a big research piece on whether or not arm slot actually matters at all. Because we care a lot about it when pitchers change their arm slots, but it might not matter at all. I will probably be doing some QB lists and fantasy football stuff down the pipe at some point in the future. QB list just had its launch day with a bunch of rankings and stuff. So go check that out. And the final thing is check out the podcast that I co-host, Shaggin' Flies. Me and Zach Hayes, we just had an episode come out today with Justin Mason. And we had Sarah Griffin on before that, and we've had a lot of great guests, and it's a lot of fun. But yeah, that's it.
Make sure check all that great stuff out. Check him out on Twitter, of course. A great follow and a great Marylander. I can speak that firsthand. He's
thank you very much.
Great dude. Next week we will have another fun show, joined by a mystery guest. That means that I have not booked them yet, but I promise they will be special. Maybe not Ben Palmer special. They will be special. But until then, everyone be safe out there. Enjoy another week of baseball. And we're going to make like a bread truck and haul these buns. Catch you guys in the next one.